Hechel Menachem presents A Tale of Two Souls, an ongoing lecture series on the Tanya by Rabbi Yosef Yitzchok Jacobson. This is tape number 38 in the series entitled Mind Over Heart, Part 2, recorded live at Hechel Menachem, Brooklyn, New York.
Good morning. The Alter Rebbe once said, "Medaf leb meditzeit." You have to live with the time. So at the time when he said it, the Chassidim didn't understand what it means. Today we understand, "Medaf leb meditzeit." You move the clock. See, a lot of people forgot to move the clock last night. But the pshat was, the Alter Rebbe's brother later explained that he meant with the parshas Hashavua. Living with the time is with the weekly parsha. Okay, Perikid Beis, Daf Yud Zayin Amid Aleph, that's page 33. The line that begins with the words mitzvah satera kanal, mitzvah satera v'afal pikein. Right, the word v'afal pikein eini nikir tzadikla. The story of our life is defined in the Tanya as a tale of two souls. A nefesh abahamis, Nefesh HaChiyunis, Nefesh HaTivis, an animalistic, vital, natural soul, and a Nefesh HaLikis, a divine, godly, transcendental soul. Every Jew possesses both of these consciousnesses, and the tale of his life is an ongoing battle and struggle between these two souls. Their struggle is, generally speaking, on two fronts. In Tanya terminology, on the internal life of man and on the external life of man. They struggle concerning the external life of man, his machshava, dibur, maisa, his thought, speech, and action. Each one desires to possess, to have exclusive dominion over the province of man's thought, speech, and action. The Nefesh HaBahamis wants to conquer his Machshava Dibur HaMaisa, as well as the Nefesh HaLikis wants to captivate his Machshava Dibur HaMaisa, meaning that the man's thoughts, words, and deeds shall be an instrument expressing the character of the Nefesh HaLikis, that is her desire, and conversely the Nefesh HaBahamis. That is one front where the fight is taking place, where the war, the ongoing perpetual conflict is taking place. But there's also another front where it's taking place, on the pnimius of the human being, on the internal life and persona of man. There is also the struggle between the Nefesh HaLikis and the Nefesh HaBahamis. What should design and form man's inner personality? His emotions, his cognitive faculties, his convictions, his perspective, his outlook. The Nefesh HaBahamis desires that her character should be that which shall fill man's inner consciousness. So what should be the content and direction of his love, of his awe, of his geshmak, his delight, should be in temporary, worldly reality. The Nefesh HaLikis, on the other hand, desires that man's inner personality should be pervaded by her character and consciousness, which means that his gishmak, his delight, should be in godliness and spirituality.
Can you give an example of this? What's the scene? The first time talking about the external, so that when I take a look, the Nefesh HaBahamis would say, "No, just drink the orange juice." Another one, the Nefesh HaLikis would say, "No, before you make the bracha, you make a bracha." We're listening to the mayach of the Nefesh HaLikis. But now we're talking about, say, the panemius. What's this mean? That you should work out so much that you shouldn't even want. I mean, that the mitzvah is not to even have hanah. I don't know what's the scene of the panemius of the Nefesh of the machlokes between Nefesh HaLikis and Nefesh HaBahamis.
What's the scene of the machlekes between the Nefesh HaLikis and the Nefesh HaBahamis on the pnimius?
Yes.
Not about actual concrete deeds or thoughts or words, but what's a person's geshmak? What is a person's geshmak? Whether he does it or he doesn't do it. So the Nefesh HaBahamas wants that her perception should pervade man's reality. So therefore, what's taka his geshmak becomes his geshmak. Geshmak means delight, pleasure. In physicality, in the mundane reality. The Nefesh HaLikis, on the other hand, desires that her perspective and her consciousness should pervade man's reality. Her faculties, her emotions, her cognitive attributes should pervade his entire reality.
Isn't that the external thing found in the Nefesh HaLikis, in Maisa and Machshav Adiva and Maisa? It seems like it's a more fine and more subtle.
Of course it's more subtle. Of course this is a more subtle conflict, of course. The result of this conflict determines different types of spiritual personalities described in the Tanya. The tzaddik is that human being where the Nefesh HaLikis was victorious on all fronts. So therefore the tzaddik's only geshmak is in godliness and spirituality. He doesn't have another geshmak. Anything else is abhorrent to him. The Rasha, on the other hand, the Nefesh HaBahamas triumphed even in the Machshav HaDibur HaMais, even on the external front. The Beinoni, the intermediate man, is that human being where the Nefesh HaLikis did not triumph in his internal self. You cannot say that his whole Geshmak is exclusively godliness. Absolutely not. He has a Geshmak in the world as well. And in the world as something which is independent, which is separated from Hashem. That's what he has a geshmak. In other words, his inner life is torn between two perspectives, two distinct ideologies and perceptions. It's just that the Nefesh HaBahamas succeeded in making the Nefesh HaLikis triumphant in his Machshav HaDibur HaMais, and on the external front of the battle, the Nefesh HaLikis is always victorious.
When a person does a mitzvah with the sole purpose of connecting to God, at that moment, is he a tzaddik?
You want to know if a person does a mitzvah with the sole purpose of connecting to Hashem, if he's a tzaddik at that moment? There are certain times where even internally the Beinoni is similar to the tzaddik. Can you deem him a tzaddik at that time? No. How does the Beinoni manage to do this? So the Alter Rebbe said, because mayach shalat al alef, there's an inherent supremacy of mind over heart, inherent in man's nature. And creation, he says, Mayach Hashal to Allah. The mind rules the heart. So therefore, despite the fact that a person can possess cravings or impulses in a certain direction, he has constantly the ability to control these cravings in the sense that they do not have to be actualized on a behavioral level. This is if he has cravings to do something which is unhealthy. The same is the other way around. If he has to do something, but his impulse dictates that he should not do it, for whatever reason, he has a power, the mind has a power over the heart to rule the heart, and despite the fact that the heart is totally uninterested in it, to go ahead and engage in whatever he has to engage in. So this is the technique or the weapon that the Beinoni employs on a constant basis in order to secure his integrity in his Machshav HaDibur HaMais, that despite the fact that he can possess taivus, cravings and impulses and desires that stem from which perception? From the Nefesh HaBahamas perception? They nevertheless do not actualize themselves in his behavior, in his thought, speech or action. But Mayach Shalat al Alev is a technique that the Beinoni uses. As we mentioned last week, first and foremost, there has to be this Mayach. There has to be the conviction, the understanding that this is the healthy thing, this is the proper thing. If your Mayach agrees to your Lev, so then you can't even introduce the dynamic of Mayach Shalat al Alev. The mayach doesn't differ from the left. So first there has to be the awareness, the understanding of what is right and what is wrong, what is healthy and what is unhealthy. And this is for sure given by the Beinoni. Because as a result of contemplation, meditation, and attachment of his mind, he comes to realize and be aware of what is true in life and what is untrue in life. He comes to appreciate the truth of the divine reality. He comes to appreciate and understand what constitutes his own real truth and his own real good, his nefesh alikis. And then, and as a result of that, despite the fact that he still possesses duality in the conflict, and his heart gravitates towards a direction which is antithetical to this awareness, nevertheless, due to the fact that the mind rules the heart and this inherent supremacy of mind over heart, he doesn't have to allow it to go to the next step and actually take a hold over his life. And Alter Rebbe added that in addition to the mind-heart dynamic, where mind rules the heart, there is over here another aspect, and that is that since we're dealing not just with mind and heart per se, but also with a struggle between the divine soul, which is connected with the mind, and the animal soul, which is connected with the heart. So there is also another aspect, because the relationship of these two souls and the two perspectives that stem from these two souls is similar to the relationship between light and darkness. A little light, we see, dispels a large amount of darkness. And in what manner does it banish this darkness? Inevitably, automatically, naturally, without any effort or strain. You light a candle and the darkness is dispelled automatically. And so is also in the spiritual light and darkness of Kedusha versus Klipa, of divinity versus that which is the antithesis of divinity. That when one introduces Kedusha, even a little bit of it, it dispels a lot of darkness. And in what manner? Inevitably, automatically. So therefore, when one's mayach, when one uses his mayach to access Kedusha, the klipa dynamic which stems from the lev is dispelled and dispelled inevitably and automatically. This is the Beinoni's weapon. And this is how he secures his integrity every day and every moment of his life. And now the Alter Rebbe continues. Nevertheless, Einei Nikra Tzadik Klal. He is not deemed a tzaddik at all. And what does he mean with this additional word, klal, at all? Not only is he not deemed a tzaddik gomer, a complete tzaddik, not even a tzaddik sheinei gomer. He's not deemed a tzaddik at all, any type of tzaddik, even an incomplete tzaddik. Despite the fact that the Beinoni does only good and never engages in an evil act, word, or thought, nevertheless, he is not a tzaddik. To be sure, externally, he and the tzaddik live an identical life. They both engage in similar, identical activities. And they both prevent themselves from the very same activities. So externally, looking from outside in, the Beinoni and the tzaddik are identical, absolutely identical. But looking from the inside out, the picture changes. Although externally they are the same, internally, in their pnimiyazdik reality, in their essential psychological and spiritual structure, they are two distinct personalities. Two different type of spiritual personalities. The Beinoni and the Tzaddik are not even on the same ladder. You're not dealing with the same process where you climb a ladder and there's the Beinoni on one step and a few steps later comes the Tzaddik. It's not two steps on the same ladder. It's two distinct pathways. Two divergent roads. In one road, the tzaddik travels, and in the other, the Beinoni travels. And indeed, parenthetically, it's not so parenthetical. This very notion is one of the unique contributions of the Tanya. In creating, constructing the model of the Beinoni and placing it in an independent road and attributing to it an end and a purpose in of itself, this is a very powerful contribution of the Alter Rebbe in the Tanya. That a person should know that he could strive to be a Beinoni and to place the Beinoni as an end in life, as a purpose, as a goal, it's something that distinguishes the Tanya. Because the tzaddik is a perfected person. It's a perfected individual. A person who has rid himself from all negativity and evil in his life. And we all know that a year goes by and another year goes by, and as much as we toil and we work and we try, we do not achieve absolute harmony in our life. To the least, we don't achieve this absolute harmony. And a person has to struggle. We do not feel that we have the ability to achieve this spiritual utopia in our life. Even when there is a peace process that's introduced into your life for a week, the next week you're torn apart again. So where does a person go from here? So the Alter Rebbe says, the purpose of your life is not necessarily to be a tzaddik. There are some people from which Hashem desires they should be tzaddikim, and He gives them the resources for it. But then there are, Beni is the ordinary man, and it's a purpose for the ordinary man. It's a goal for the ordinary man. It's an end of it for itself. And this end everyone can achieve. And everyone can relate to. So He creates and He grants the human being a perspective in life, not only a perspective, an end, a goal, a purpose, which although does not introduce and bring full, complete victory, nevertheless it doesn't mean that his life is meaningless and useless, because he's not a tzaddik. So he says, no, the Beinoni is someone who has that struggle, and will always have that struggle, and nevertheless he's fulfilling his purpose in life. What is the difference between these two distinct spiritual personalities, between the tzaddik and the Beinoni? So the Alter Rebbe says, Mipnei sheyisrein hazeh, asher la'or nefesh alikis, ala cheshech v'sichlus v'la klipa nitchem emela. For this dominance discussed above, that the light of the divine soul has over the darkness and folly of the clip of the animal soul, which is automatically dispelled, as discussed earlier. That when you introduce the light of the divine soul, even in the midst of the powerful cravings of the animal soul, you have the ability to dispel it, and automatically, so this dominance is limited to the divine soul's aforementioned three garments. It's only in thought, speech, and action that the divine soul of the Beinoni dominates his animal soul. So although the fact that the animal soul craves and possesses this impulse in a certain direction, when he introduces through his mayach, his nefesh elikis, it dominates the nefesh abahamis, and the nefesh abahamis doesn't express itself in thought, speech, and action. But the essence and core of the divine soul does not dominate the essence and the core of the animal soul deriving from klipa. Ki mohusavat smusa shel nefesh abahamis. For the essence and core of the animal soul, originating in klipa reality, which is lodged in the left part of the heart, remains undisturbed in the life of the Beinoni. It was absolutely not displaced by the divine soul. The essence of the Nefesh HaBahamas, the core of it, the klipa, which is klipa, in the beinoni, is alive and well. It functions, and it lives, and it exists, and it's felt consciously. Concerning the expression, the realization, the actualization of the soul, here the beinoni is identical to the tzaddik. Here the nefesh elikis is triumphant, it dominates the animal soul. But when you deal with the essence of humanity, with the core of his personality, it's in number, speaking quantitatively, of course, we're not dealing with numbers, you're dealing with 50-50. There's the nefesh elikis reality, there's nefesh bahamas reality. And the nefesh bahamas reality remains undisturbed. Achar hatfila, after prayer, she'ein risvei eish avas Hashem bizgalos libi b'chalol hayamani. When the burning love of Hashem is no longer in a revealed state in the right part of his heart. During prayer, as the Alter Rebbe discussed earlier in the chapter, as a result of the unique energy that exists in prayer, as a result of the meditation and awareness that the Beinoni achieves in the time of prayer, he also manages to arouse a love in his heart to Hashem. So when the love glows openly and is palpably felt in his heart, taka the nefesh abahamis is a bit disturbed. Even in his internal self, the only perception, the only geschmack, the only delight is in godliness and spirituality. But when davening concludes, and the nefesh abahamis wakes up again, so although in the actualization of it, then ben nefesh alakis is concerning the actualization of the souls. The nefesh alakis is triumphant concerning the very core of his personality. There is a duality, and the duality creates a conflict between one perspective and perception and a drastically different perspective and perception.
You say that the soul. Struggle is, why is the struggle into
the heart? Struggle should be into the brain, no? Where is the bottom of the soul? The brain or the heart? Specifically, the concept of Meir Shalat Lalov we discussed last week. I'll just say one thing. The Nefesh Elikis is very much connected to the mind, Alter Rebbe said in chapter 9. The Nefesh Bahamas is very much connected to the heart. Kiyim, rather, the love after prayer, what is the state of the Beinoni after prayer? Teicher Ratzuf Avimusataris. His heart is inlaid with hidden love. She Ava Hativis Shebenefesh Elikis Kamashakas of Lakama. Meaning that love which is natural to the divine soul, as will be discussed further in Tanya, in chapter 18, that in the very structure of the Jew, he loves Hashem. Love to Hashem is not something that has to be acquired and gained, but rather the very fact that he has a neshama, nefesh alikis, translates in the fact that inherently a Jew possesses a love and a craving and affection towards the divine reality. But this ava is called ava mesoteris, which means it's concealed because it's often relegated to the subconscious layers of the Jew's life. Or at least, it's sometimes more concealed than hidden. So by tefillah, the Beinoni experiences a revealed conscious love. And as a result of that, the nefesh elikis pervades his entire personality. But after tefillah, that dissipates. And what he remains is that what he remains with is the taychayrots of Ava Mesoteris. There is still an inherent connection that he has to Hashem, and a hard connection, but nevertheless, it's not characterized by that fervor, that zealousness, that fire that he experienced during prayer. Va'azai then, after prayer, yachay liyis, sichlus haksil harab is galus libe b'chalol asmali. It is possible for the folly of the wicked fool, which is a metaphor for the animal soul, to reveal itself in the left part of the heart. Lis avais taiva, craving and experiencing a lust. L'chol inyone gashmi selam has. To all physical matters of this world, bein behetir, bein beisich, whether permitted or whether forbidden, God forbid, ki'ilu la yispalel klal, as though he never davened. Aye, in the time of davening, he would never experience such a taiva, because then godliness was not just an abstract hypothesis, or not just an intellectual truth. It pervaded his entire being. This is what he loved, this is what he celebrated, this was his whole geschmack. That's by davening. But after davening, the Nefesh HaBahamas is back. And by the Nefesh HaBahamas, physicality and ego is what dominates. And therefore, when the Nefesh HaBahamas awakes, the Rabbeinu can experience a real taiva and lust towards physicality, towards the Gashmis of Elam Hazeh, as divorced from its divine intention, from its divine purpose. Whether permitted things, but totally divorced from a divine, higher transcendental purpose, or even forbidden things. Hello. So now, what's the next step? And this dynamic, the Alter Rebbe gives the model of prayer versus after prayer, because by the Beinoni, tefillah is extremely important, as we'll see in a moment. But this every human being can relate to, that although we have two souls, there are times when one soul, the Nefesh HaLikis, apparently fills our entire personality. And we celebrate our Yiddishkeit not only with our mind, even with our heart. We really love it, and at that moment we don't even imagine why at another time we would want anything else. But then that seemingly a type of utopia passes, and then Nefesh HaBahamas is back with its full strength. So now what happens at this moment? Zogdal Terebe Ela Shebidvarisu. However, in the case of the craving to something which is prohibited, Einai Oila Bedaitai Lasi Sa'isra Pel Mamash Chas V'Shol. It does not enter his mind to transgress an actual practice, God forbid. Ella, hirhulei aveira, hakashmei aveira. Thoughts of sin, which are in certain aspects more heinous than actual sin, yichaylim lifei lalos lamechei, can manage to rise to his mind, then to distract him from Torah and divine service. Okay, as our sages say in Baba Basra, Daf Kuf Samach Dalad Amid Beis, Gimel Averis Ein Adam Nitzelman B'Chol Yom. There are three sins so difficult to avoid that no man is safe from transgressing on a daily basis. And two of the examples he quotes, Hirud Aveira V'Iyun Tfilichu, thoughts of sin, lack of concentration in prayer, and the third is slanderous gossip. So thus the Beinoni is included in the generalization that Ein Adam Nitzelman B'Chol Yom, that no man avoids Hirud Aveira, thoughts of sin. Rak, however, the impression retained in his mind from his meditation during davening, and the natural love and fear of Hashem hidden in the right part of his heart, as discussed, the Nefesh HaLikis naturally possesses Avos Hashem and Yiras Hashem. So these two dynamics enable him to prevail over and dominate the evil animal soul's craving, preventing the evil from gaining the supremacy and dominion over the city, the body, carrying out its craving from the potential to the actual, is slabish bevari aguf, by clothing itself in the organs of the body, in actual speech or deed. What is Alter Rebbe saying? The Nibbeinani can have a craving towards forbidden things, even towards permitted things, even towards forbidden things. But concerning something forbidden, it doesn't even enter his mind to actually violate a mitzvah, or to actually engage in this transgression. Why not? If he craves for it, so naturally it should come to his mind a thought to go ahead and do it. In other words, apparently, what's the difference between the Beni and the Rasha? Internally, they're identical.
Yeah.
They both have a taiva towards sin. They both have a taiva to do something unhealthy spiritually. It's not like the tzaddik. So what's the difference? The difference, apparently, is one difference. The Rasha acts on the taiva, and the Beni never acts on the taiva. But if so, why shouldn't the Beni entertain a thought to go ahead and do it? If he has a taiva to do it, so what does a taiva bring? You want to do it, you have an impulse to do this thing. So immediately there should come a thought, okay, let me go ahead and do it. And then at the last moment, the Beni prevents himself from doing it. Versus the Rasha, which will actually go based on it, but which will actually go act on the taiva. How does the Beni prevent himself? Because Meir Chalto Alev. You have a taiva, you want to do it, you think of doing it, but you don't do it. The Alter Rebbe says no. He has a taiva towards it. He craves towards it, he lusts towards it. But he actually never entertains the idea of actually going ahead and doing it. But it's rather in these words that Alter Rebbe articulates a very important aspect that we have to understand concerning the Beinoni. The difference of the Rasha and the Beinoni doesn't begin on the concrete actualization level. It originates in a deeper place. It originates in a more internal place in their personality. But this requires understanding. Why? It would seem that internally they're identical. They both have a nefesh elokis and nefesh habahamas. And both of them are consciously felt. So the only difference is what actually dominates their thought, conscious thought, speech, and action. So what do we mean when we say that the difference between them begins in a deeper place? The difference between the tzaddik and the Beinoni begins in a deeper place. But the difference between a Beinoni and a Rasha seems, the only difference between them seems only to be external. It seems to be nothing but external. Zog dal ter Rebbe nein, ein yayla b'dayte lasas yisra b'peil mamash.
Say that the tzaddik is a special road, or unique, has a gift from Hashem, a special neshama. I mean, Russia has a klala from Hashem, a special neshama. Does it consider?
There's no such a thing. There's no such a thing. A person has a klala that he doesn't have free choice. It can work the other way. It doesn't work this way. Pshat is as follows.
Well, if it's not from Hashem, then where is it from? Like Russia doesn't stop. Doesn't
he
consider not doing?
Why? Alter Rebbe discussed in chapter 11, Rishayim Aleim Charatis, Rishayim are full of remorse. They do an Aveda, they regret it, they do another Aveda, they regret it again. Rasha Viralai, you told me it'd be a Rasha Viralai, the lowest level of a Rasha who doesn't even feel his nefesh alakis anymore. It's so deeply buried. But the average Rosh feels both nefashas. So briefly, the point is as follows. The Beinoni is permeated with such a profound awareness of what is true in life and what is untrue in life that the performance of an act or the utterance of words or the conscious engagement in thoughts which are antithetical and alien to the blueprint that the Creator has given the human being based on which he should live his life, the performance of such an act or words or thoughts are out of the question in his life. They are mufrach, they say. It's abgefrakt in Yiddish. It's totally out of the question. And something that's totally out of the question, the performance of it, you don't think about doing it.
What does he get into his mind?
One second. We see this actually by every person, not only by the Beinoni, in every culture, in every society. There are certain things that although people might crave for, they never actually go ahead and plan in their mind to do it. Certain things, yeah. But usually in every culture, in every society, there are certain boundaries. Beyond this boundary, you could think about it. You could desire it. You can crave for it. But the actual entertaining of a thought to go ahead and do it, that doesn't exist. The craving remains ultimately abstract. It doesn't translate in an actual concrete plan to go and implement and act upon that craving. There's an interesting Ebenezra on the Pasuk Lo Sachmait at the conclusion of Aseres Adibres in Parshas Yisra. The 10th and final commandment is Loi Sachmeit. You should not crave the home of your fellow man, the wife of your fellow man, his servant, his maidservant, his ox, his donkey, v'choyla sherlereach. Loi Sachmeit. Now, as the Rambam explains in Hilchas Hazela v'Aveda, Loi Sachmeit is not the prohibition against possessing a craving, but actually a craving that takes you to the next step, where you begin contriving schemes and plans of actually getting it from the other human being. Fragda Ben Ezra, how could you tell a person Lo Sachmeit? If you want it, you want it. If a person has a house that I like, how could you tell? You could tell him, Don't go steal his money. That's an act. It's levushim in tiny terminology. But it's Lo Sachmeit. Huh? Yeah, I tell you, don't want this. Do not desire this anymore.
That's why
you said the Rambam. Huh? So the Rambam says, yeah, but the Rambam says that Lo Sachmeit doesn't only mean that you shouldn't take it. Lo Sachmeit means, even think of going ahead and taking it. So the Ibn Ezra gives the following metaphor. He says, I open up Ibn Ezra here. Atin l'chamashl, I'll give you a metaphor. If you have an ishkfari is a person who grew up in a kfar. Kfar is a village. Sheyesh li das nechayna. He has a healthy mind. V'hura bas melech shei yafa. And he sees the princess, the daughter of the king, who's beautiful. He might possess a craving, but nevertheless, he will not actually go ahead and bring that craving to the next level because he knows it's not shaykh. And he brings the example. He says, "V'al tachshav zak fari shokechet ben amr shigoyim sheyisav v'shiyulik nafayim leif hashamayim." You ever saw a person, has cravings? He should have wings because he wants to fly. Yeah, a person might want to fly, but you know, you're a human being. You're not a bird. Yeah, so it's so out of the question. It's not possible. You should actually. So, you want to fly? A person could want to fly. Yeah, children. Everyone wants to soar, yeah. Physically, spiritually. Huh?
Al
Sharpton wants to
fly. He wants to be able to fly, and he can fly. He can fly high to any person.
Peter Pan.